Hello, this is Dick Hayden from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I shall be reading to you from Spare Times, the news and notes of the Raleigh Outlaws of October 18, 2019. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and it has been edited for currency, clarity, and time constraints. Well, the world's finest chocolate is here. There are 60 bars to the box, and it is $1 per bar. We have some mixed boxes with some with only milk chocolate or almond. Our target date is to have it all sold and the money turned in by December 14, which is our last night to bowl before the Christmas holiday. So please see Sharon to pick up a box or two. If you need more, please let Sharon know, and we can get it to you. Just a reminder, if you owe the league money, you may not bowl until you are paid up. Talk to our treasurer, Francis Council, if you have a problem with funds or if you need to confirm how much you owe. Our policy is 3 weeks in arrears on dues, but if you owe for shirts, candy, or any other items, then you must pay for them. This includes participation in tournaments. Money owed to the league comes out before tournament entries. Entry fees are due in the lane envelopes. Actually, they were due on Friday, October the 18th, for the James Benton Memorial CBA Tournament and shootout scheduled for November 1, 2, and 3. Entry fee for the tournament is $45, which includes singles, doubles, and team competition. The shootout is an additional $25. If an individual wishes to bowl in only certain events, they may pay $15 per event, singles, doubles, or teams. There is also a $5 registration fee for all of those attending the tournament, whether bowling or not. Total cost for a bowler for all events, including the shootout, is $75 or $50 without the shootout. For our other league friends, the deadline for entries to be sent to Terrell is October 21. Mail checks for funds to Terrell at his home address, 803 Nestleway Drive, Greensboro, North Carolina, 27406. Sharon will have tickets for the 2020 National Tournament fundraiser raffle quite soon. The Cincinnati Blind Bowling League is selling their raffle tickets for the 2020 tournament. All proceeds will help support the ABBA Tournament Fund. Tickets are $5 each. If you are interested in purchasing one or some, please email Tonya Koo how many you want and a name and address where to mail them. She will send the tickets to you, and you can return the stubs with a check made out to the ABBA Tournament Fund. There will be an envelope in with her return address. The prizes? Well, first prize is a three-night stay at the Marriott during the 2020 tournament, and that includes one morning breakfast for two. Second prize, one member's tournament registration fees up to $70 and a $100 gift card. And number three, one member's tournament registration fees up to $70 and a $50 gift card. Email Tonya Koo of the Cincinnati Blind Bowling League at tkoo@cinci.rr.com. And her telephone number is area 513-291-0065. And guess what? Hear ye is what it says on the page. Get your raffle tickets now, your ABBA raffle tickets. This one's a little different. The fundraising committee is sponsoring a cash raffle this year, and we all love winning cash. These odds are much better than just the lottery. Raffle tickets will be sold for $5 each or five tickets for $20. Two-thirds of the money raised will go to the ABBA General Fund, and one-third will be divided equally between four lucky winners. The more tickets that are sold, the higher the cash prizes. The drawing will be held at the 2020 ABBA Tournament in Cincinnati, and winners do not need to be present to win. Leagues may send in names and addresses of those wanting to participate, along with a check made payable to the ABBA, to Janice Erkilla, E-R-K-I-L-L-A. Address is 5253 42nd Avenue South, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55417. You can call Janice with any questions at 612-722-3041. Chances will also be sold at the mid-year meeting in November and at the tournament in May. Remember, you determine the amount of the cash prizes. The more you buy, the higher the prize. If anyone wishes some tickets now, please email Janice Ehrlicha, that's J-A-N-I-C-E-E-R-K-I-L-A, at R-E-R-K-I-L-L-A at Comcast.net. And good luck from the ABBA Fundraising Committee. We will bowl the ABBA Mail-O-Graphic on December 8. Entry fee is $6 and must be paid by Friday, November 8. You must have paid your sanction fees in order to bowl in this event. The Hot Shots for Week 6. Judy Eason Farr, 91. Kenny Farr, 121. Robert Parrish, 151. Azaria Dowd, 141. Albert Roberson, 131. Sharon Benton, 136. Miriam Dixon, 125. Kaisha Adams, 121. Letitia Adams, 112. Jenna Meck, 123. Marjorie Hurd, 129. Tommy Simmons, 96. Carla Smith, 134. Kevin Foster, 184. Van McLean Sr., 93. Herbert Everett, 188. Ginger Rush, 155. Jeff Tucker, 100. John Watson, 93. And Justin Miles, 82. Who has the bye, or what week do I have off? With our new schedule, everyone has 3 bye weeks per year, unless you have already bowled Team 2 this season. Here's a list of who has a bye for the rest of October and November. On 10-18, it was Team 8, Silver Bullets. 10-25, Team 4, Gunslingers. 11-8, Team 5, Strike Time. 11-15, Team 1, Sharpshooters. And 11-22, Team 9, Hangmen. In case you were not aware, the Raleigh Avengers goal ball teams practice at the Governor Moorhead School gym on Friday night. This is a youth goal ball for ages up to 18 and is divided into 2 divisions. Seniors are up to age 18. Contact the coach, William Tubilla, at william.tubillaja@gmail.com for more information. If adults are interested, there may be an opportunity for an adult team also. Again, contact the coach for further information. So here's what the schedule looks like for October. On the 18th, there was practice for the seniors and juniors. On the 25th, practice for seniors and juniors. On next one up is November 8, practice for seniors and juniors. And the 22nd, practice for seniors and juniors. The 29th, Thanksgiving holiday, no practice. Now, you notice I skipped November 1st and November 15th. The line there is blank, indicating no practice on those days, apparently. But check with your coach to be sure. For the month of December, on the 6th, practice for seniors and juniors. 13th, practice for seniors and juniors. The 20th, start the holiday break, no practice. And the 27th, Christmas week, no practice. Moving on, Craig Bowers has a note to GMS alumni members, families, and friends. It is great sadness that I report to you the passing of Craig W. Bowers, a 1980 graduate of GMS. Craig was a quiet but friendly person. According to the obituary of the News and Observer, Craig passed away on October 12. Graveside services will be held at a later date. It's time to plan ahead. The Gutterthon and Bake Sale will occur on November 8th, so be sure to get your recipes ready. Deadline November 1. Don't wait until the last minute. The Challenged Athletes Foundation grant open application period is nearing its end. The 2020 CAF grant application period opened on September the 3rd, and it closes on November the 1st. No paper applications are available. The application is all completed online. The application and full information about the grant, guidelines, eligibility requirements, FAQs, and important dates and deadlines can be found at https://www.challengedathletes.org/programs/grants. Here's some basic information about what goes into an application. A 3-4 paragraph bio, information about yourself. Number 2, what is your disability? And they give you some choices in the application form. Number 3, your short and long-term goals. Number 4, a doctor's letter stating your disability. Number 5, a picture of yourself in your sport. Number 6, a reference letter from a coach or teammate or fellow bowler. Number 7, the total household income must attach a W-2 if you work. Or for all household income, including other family members, you need a W-2 for that. If you don't work. What will you use the money for? Competition? Training? Equipment? Do you have to choose only one? Number 9, how will the grant assist you? Number 10, list any volunteer or community involvement that you have had. And finally, number 11, have you ever received a CAF grant in the past? If the answer is yes, they will ask you to tell them what year it was in. The application does ask for other information, but the above items kind of get you generally on a really good start. Now, here are some other key points to remember from the Challenged Athletes Foundation. Start your application early. Every year, hundreds of grantees start their applications the last week and sometimes even on the last day of the application cycle. This inevitably leads to hundreds of frantic phone calls and emails to our grants team when applicants come across an issue with or have a question about something on their application. We do our very best to answer all questions, but our team is small. If you wait until right before the deadline to submit your application, you may not get immediate assistance. Applicants who have not hit the submit button by 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Friday, November 1st, will be invited to reapply the following year. Do your research. Talk to a coach, teammates, a medical professional, or do some independent research about what grant will be most beneficial to you and your sports or fitness needs. Do not apply for equipment without researching it to make sure that it is the best fit for you. If applying for coaching or training or travel competition funds, please do some research on price points so that you have a ballpark idea of how much you will need to request. Demonstrate a need for CAF assistance. Please keep in mind that we hope to help as many people as possible with meaningful grants. Equipment requests should be made when you need a new piece of equipment to improve your training and competition, or when you cannot compete without one. Please help us provide equipment and funding to other athletes by making sure that your requests are truly meaningful. Your application does not have to be completed in one sitting. You will be able to save your application and come back to it at any time to submit it before the November 1st deadline. If you have questions, the best way to get a hold of the grants team is via email. Please send a detailed email to CAFGrants, all one word, CAFGRANTS, at challengedathletes.org. And we will get back to you with an answer to your questions just as soon as we can. The annual New Vision Gala is for the benefit of the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service, or TRRS. And it is going to be held on Friday, November 1. The theme this year is black and white and red across North Carolina. Cocktail attire is suggested for the program, which begins with cocktails and then dinner and a program, running from 6:30 to 9:30 and dancing to follow until 11. The event will be held at the Raleigh Hilton North Hills, 3415 Wake Forest Road in Raleigh, 27609. Tickets are $100 per person. And there will be a New Vision showcase as well as a silent auction in addition to it. Please RSVP actually it says by October the 18th, it's right that time now, by calling 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. The North Carolina Reading Service website is www.ncreadingservice.org. And I hope to see you all at the New Vision Gala. A holiday event. Insightful Visionaries is holding a holiday concert featuring local performers Donnie Best, Sheena Lewis, Gilbert Thomas, John and Sandy DeLuca, and Tim Snyder. On Saturday, December 7, at the Governor Moorhead School Dining Hall, 301 Ash Avenue in Raleigh. Refreshments will be provided from 5 to 6 p.m., and the entertainment will be from 6 until 8 p.m. Admission and refreshments are free, but donations will be taken to the benefit of the Governor Moorhead School students. There will also be a program, and ads may be purchased in it as well to help with the cost of refreshments and to raise funds. If you would like more information on ads or the event, you may contact the organizers at the website, www.insightfulvisionaries.org, or by email at admin@insightfulvisionaries.org, or give them a call at 919-890-0117. In case you were not aware, the Raleigh Avengers goalball teams practice at the Governor Moorhead School gym on Friday nights. This is a youth goalball for ages up to 18, and it is divided into two divisions. Seniors are up to age 18. Contact the coach, William Tubija, T-U-B-I-L-L-E-J-A, at william.tubillega@gmail.com for more information. If adults are interested, there may be an opportunity for an adult team also. Once again, contact the coach for further information. And I know you're going to say, well, you just read that a minute ago, and here you're reading it again, and you're right. That's because it's a pretty important thing. The Raleigh Avengers goal ball is quite an activity, and they want to make sure that everybody knows about it. So heads up on that one. With interest in ice hockey growing in the area, go Canes, we thought that this information from USA Hockey website might be of interest to you. Blind hockey is the same exhilarating, fast-paced sport as ice hockey, with only one main difference. All of the players are legally blind. Players must be classified as eligible in one of three International Blind Sports Federation classifications. That's the IBSA. Typically, totally blind athletes play goal or defense. Lower-sighted athletes play defense, and higher-sighted athletes may play forward. The most significant modification that the sport features is an adapted puck that makes a noise and is both bigger and slower than a traditional puck. Players' levels of vision may range from legally blind, that's approximately 10% of vision or less, to totally blind. Blind hockey is an excellent spectator sport as it is easily recognizable to the average hockey fan, with minimal rule adaptations to help with gameplay and player safety. Custom 3-foot high nets are used rather than the traditional 4-foot nets to keep the puck low and near the ice so it can make noise and be tracked orally. Teams must complete one pass in the attacking zone prior to being able to score. This provides both the low vision defense and the goalie an extra opportunity to track the puck. An on-ice official uses a different whistle to indicate that a pass has been completed and the attacking team is eligible to score. Tag up offsides is used with the assistance of verbal communication from on-ice officials. The game is played with standard IIHF safety protocols, including no-touch icing and crease violations to ensure utmost player safety. And all players must wear full protective gear, including a face mask. Blind hockey has been played in Canada since the early 1970s. The sport was first played in the U.S. on October 18, 2014. Wow, about 5 years ago. With the first ever Blind Hockey Summit in Newburgh, New York. At this event, local players and visiting Canadian players formed two teams and played two structured games. following a try-it session which introduced the sport to so many new players. At the 2015 USA Hockey Disabled Hockey Festival in Buffalo, New York, blind hockey was introduced to the rest of the disabled hockey community. Again, U.S. and Canadian players came together to form two teams and played a single exhibition game. Word has spread quickly about this new discipline of hockey, and players and programs have sprung up all over the country. The Blind Hockey Summit is now an annual USA Hockey-sanctioned event, which brings players and administrators together from across the country to play and grow the sport. As one of the fastest-growing segments of disabled hockey, blind hockey is a great opportunity for those individuals with vision impairment to be a part of the best sport in the world, ice hockey. And I think we can add a Go Canes one more time to that one. It's now time for Top Tech Tidbits. You can check out the Top Tech Tidbits online to see all the information available, or you can subscribe to have it come to you via email each week. The website is www.flying-blind.com. They offer classified ads for various pieces of computer equipment, screen readers, braille displays, etc., as well as their tech tidbits. So here's information from the latest issue. The best job search engines. This Inc.com, that's Inc.com article is entitled, The 16 Best Job Search Engines in 2019. Using Echo for home security, this podcast discusses the new guard mode of your Echo devices. October 2019 Access World. In addition to a very fair review of the Windows Keyboard Power User Guide, this issue contains a review of Judy Dixon's book, 31 Cool Things You Can Do with Your iPhone, From Fun to Practical to Entertaining. And it reviews three free task management apps and lots of material concerning employment for the blind. The funniest things to ask Alexa when you need a good laugh. We jump back to Alexa for this CNET article. A beginner's guide to using Mac OS with VoiceOver. This Apple Viz post provides coherent instruction and lots of resources. Webinar on switching to the Mac. The first public webinar from World Services for the Blind will present a webinar showing five common Windows tasks and their Mac equivalents. The webinar took place on Thursday, 17 October, at GMT 2300. Lucia, easy-to-use big-button cell phone for the blind and visually impaired. This phone has voice guidance in English and Spanish and is aimed at those wanting a simpler phone. JAWS 2020 on Tech Talk. Hear about the final release of JAWS 2020 and what comes next on Tech Talk Tuesday, 22 October at GMT Zero. Access U 2019 class presentation materials. KnowAbility provides a full listing of presentation materials available to download from the Access U, that's the letter U, 2019 conference website. How to fix sound problems in Windows 10. This How to Geek article is useful in the various resources that it offers. Blind Bargains Quest number 195. Lots of Google information with more to come next time as they summarize the Google event in the next episode. And finally, accessible voting on Eyes on Success. Accessible voting technology and voting rights are discussed on episode number 1942. Next up, the calendar of events. The Wake Federation of the Blind meets regularly at the Community United Church of Christ, 814 Dixie Trail in Raleigh, on the second Saturday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Robert Parrish is the president and may be contacted at 919-616-1606 or by email at robertcparrish7@gmail.com. You're invited to see Arts Access website for a listing of audio-described performances, and that is www.artsaccessinc.com. inc.org/ad-performances.shtml. The Raleigh Mayor's Committee for Persons with Disabilities next meeting will be Thursday, November 21 from noon until 1 p.m. The organization meets in room 305 of the City Municipal Building, 222 West Hargett Street, downtown Raleigh. Ricky Scott is the Mayor's Committee Chair. His contact information is telephone number 919-673-8300, or his email is rickyscott09@gmail.com. And the Raleigh Wake Chapter of the North Carolina Council of the Blind meets regularly on the second Thursday of each month from 7 until 8:30 p.m. at the Emmanuel Baptist Church, located at 2110 Noble Road. Please contact Lawrence Carter at 919-856-0034 for more information about this group's schedule and activities. Let's turn now to recipes that will bowl you over from the Chuck Wagon Gang. And after that, I think we have some more information. So first up here is apple butter snickerdoodles. Who could argue with that one? It just sounds fun to say it. Ingredients, 3/4 cup of butter, 1 1/4 cup of white sugar, 2 eggs, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1/2 cup of apple butter, 3 cups of flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1 1/2 teaspoons of cornstarch, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of cinnamon, and for rolling the cookies, 1/2 cup of white sugar and 3 or 4 tablespoons of cinnamon. To taste, that's why it says 3 or 4. Your instructions: in a large bowl, beat together the butter and the white sugar for 2 minutes until light and fluffy. Add eggs and vanilla, and again, beat them, and this time until they're combined. Add the apple butter and combine thoroughly. In a medium-sized bowl, whisk together the flour, baking powder, cornstarch, salt, and cinnamon. Add half of the flour mixture to the butter mixture. Mix it well, and then add the remaining half of the dry ingredients, and then beat the total until combined. Refrigerate the dough for 4 hours, or you can go overnight. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Line a cookie sheet with parchment paper and set it aside. In a small bowl, combine the white sugar and cinnamon for rolling. Use a small cookie scoop to portion out the cookie dough. Roll each scoop into a ball, then roll the cookie dough through the cinnamon sugar. Place each cookie at least 2 inches apart on the prepared cookie sheet, and bake the cookies for 8 to 12 minutes until just lightly golden brown. Allow the cookies to cool on the cookie sheet for a minute before moving them to a cooling rack. Like that. Gonna like this one too, I think. Lemon cream cheese cookies. Ingredients for the cookies, and then we have some more for the icing. For the cookies, 2 1/2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 cup of sugar, 1/2 cup, that equals 1 stick, of unsalted butter at room temperature, 1/4 cup of cream cheese at room temperature, 1/4 cup of lemon juice, 1 large egg, room temperature, 1 1/2 tablespoons of lemon zest, 2 tablespoons, two teaspoons of cornstarch, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, and 1/4 teaspoon of salt. For the icing, 3/4 cup of powdered sugar, 1/2 tablespoon of milk, and 1/2 tablespoon of lemon juice. Here's what we're going to do. In a large bowl or mixer, cream together the butter and the cream cheese until it's smooth. Then mix in the sugar and beat until creamy. Mix in the egg, then the vanilla extract, and beat until fluffy and lightened in color. 5 to 6 minutes should do it. In a medium bowl, combine the flour, lemon zest, cornstarch, baking soda, and salt. Alternate between adding the flour mixture and the lemon juice to the cream cheese mixture, beginning and ending with the dry ingredients. Mix until a rough dough comes together. If needed, add a little more flour so the dough is not sticky. Wrap the dough in plastic wrap and then refrigerate it for 1 to 2 hours until it's chilled. When ready to bake, preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Line 2 baking sheets with parchment paper and use a tablespoon or an ice cream scoop to scoop cookie dough. Roll the dough between your hands to create balls, then transfer to a lined baking sheet. Place the baking sheets in the oven and bake for 10 to 12 minutes or until the edges are just starting to brown and pull away from the baking sheet. Remove the cookies from the oven and let them cool completely. To make the icing, whisk together powdered sugar, milk, and lemon juice until they're smooth. Add more or less powdered sugar depending on how thick you want your icing. And once the cookies are cool, drizzle icing over them and let them set before you serve them. And when you're ready to serve them, go, good, because that's what they'll be. Let's end today's program with an article from the Washington Post newspaper of October the 14th, 2019, that is titled, Her Case Opened the Way for People with Disabilities to Reclaim Their Freedom. Now hear her words open a book that could help countless more. Jenny Hatch does not like President Trump. This matters, but not for the reason you might think. This matters because the 35-year-old who has Down syndrome decided on her own that he did not deserve her support. And if a court case had gone differently 6 years ago, she would have been stripped of the ability to make even the most basic decisions for herself. She would not have been able to use her laptop to read up on current events whenever she wanted. She would not have been able, without permission, to meet with friends to talk about her favorite movies or debate the merits of presidential candidates. She would not have been able to, unless a judge deemed her worthy of an exception, to even vote. That last loss would have hit her particularly hard because she has long been a devout Republican. She has volunteered with local campaigns and speaks about George W. Bush as if he were a family friend. I don't know about Trump, Hatch tells me when I call her on a recent afternoon. He's not a good person, and I just found out that Joe Biden is running for president. He cares about people with disabilities. I didn't call Hatch to talk about politics. It just happens to be one of her favorite subjects. I called her to find out how she was feeling about her latest role, published author. 6 years ago, her Virginia court case opened the way for others with disabilities to fight for their independence. Hatch challenged a guardianship request by her parents that would have allowed them to keep her in a group home and away from the friends she wanted to live with and the job she wanted to hold. Her attorneys argued at the time that she did not need someone to make every decision for her. She simply needed support making decisions. When Hatch won her case, she became an immediate champion for disability rights. She also became a reminder of what is possible when people are judged by what they can do instead of what they cannot do. In the years since, she has delivered speeches that have brought audiences to their feet. She has watched an initiative in her name, the Jenny Hatch Justice Project, fight to get others out from under guardianship. And now she has written the foreword to a book that aims to help people with disabilities across the country live as independently as possible. Jenny's story should be the beginning of the story, says Jonathan Martinez, who was Hatch's attorney in her guardianship case. He authored the book along with Peter Blank, who served as an expert witness in her case. When I met Jenny, she was under a guardianship order, Martinez says. She was living in a group home she did not want to live in. She was not allowed to go to her church. She was not allowed to go to work. Her laptop was taken away. Her phone was taken away. If you wanted to see Jenny, you had to fill out a permission slip. You had to say when you wanted to see her and what you would do, and you could not talk about her guardianship. An axe murderer would have automatically been given the right to talk to an attorney, he says, but he had to request permission from a judge to discuss her case with her. When the judge finally ruled in Hatch's favor, granting a 1-year temporary guardianship to friends she wanted to live with, Martinez celebrated the victory and predicted more to come. For anyone who has been told that you can't do something, you can't make your own decisions, I give you Jenny Hatch and the rock that starts the avalanche. Since then, he says, 10 states have passed laws recognizing supported decision-making as a preferred alternative to guardianship. Projects centered on the issue have taken hold in about 40 states, and more court wins have followed. In the District of Columbia last year, an 87-year-old woman became the first senior citizen in the city to convince a court to terminate guardianship in favor of supported decision-making. At the same time, Martinez notes, the number of people under court-appointed guardianship has tripled since 1994, and because schools remain the number one referral source, the most common age for people to fall under it is 18. Without choice, we don't have rights, he says. There are hundreds of thousands of people with disabilities who have lost their rights. Martinez says the purpose of the book is to give people an easy-to-follow guide so that they can find out how to locate the support they need to maintain their independence. The book title is Supported Decision-Making, From Justice for Jenny to Justice for All. Kelly Morris, the friend who took in Hatch when she won her case, says she and her husband, Jim Talbert, did not fully know what they were jumping into at the time. Hatch had worked at their thrift shop, and they took her into their home after she was injured in a bike accident. When her parents later placed her in a group home, they knew she was unhappy, so they decided to help her fight for the guardianship. We didn't even recognize what we were doing, Morris says, and now looking back, I'm not a religious person, I'm more spiritual, but it was all divine intervention from everybody that we met to how the process took place. They have now opened a third thrift shop, and Hatch helps at different locations. She still lives with them and has grown close to Morris's daughter, Jordan, who is 21, and has cerebral palsy. Hatch is no longer under guardianship, and Morris says that they have talked about moving her into an apartment or a building or a small house for her on their property so that she can remain close and still have her own space. I would love to see her married and have her own life, Morris says. When I ask Hatch how she's doing, she repeats several times, I am so happy. I am so happy that I get to be with my friends that I care about, she says, her voice suddenly shaking. I love Kelly and Jim so much, I don't know what I would do without my friends. Are you crying? Happy tears, she says. I'm happy that I won my case. I don't know what I would do without Jonathan. She hasn't yet seen the book, which was just published, but she says she's excited for her copy to arrive. Martinez says that after he asked her whether she wanted to write the opening section, he found a handwritten letter from her in his mailbox. It is now the foreword of the book. In it, Hatch writes that she hopes her story helps others and that we all deserve a life that makes us happy. When I have help to make decisions, I can handle anything that is my mindset, she writes. I choose when I get to go get my nails done, or go to the mall, or go to the movies. I can go to a restaurant and choose what I eat. These are decisions that most people make every day. I will never forget what Jonathan and my friends Jim and Kelly have done for me, and that makes me feel like a real person. Well, you have been listening to this week's edition of Spare Times. We hope that you have enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is readily available after the broadcast as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Dick Hayden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long, until next time.